Chapter 12. Kip walked shoeless on the beach for an hour before his feet blistered. He walked on blistered feet for half an hour before the blisters cracked and bled. He walked on bleeding feet for less than a minute before the obvious occurred to him. He sat heavily on the sand and sighed. How many months had he been drafting now? The Chromaria taught that you weren't supposed to think of drafting first to solve your problems, but they had it exactly backwards. Magic was useful for everything. It just killed you. You should always think of it first, then you should decide if a little dram of death was worth it. Functionally, perhaps the same thing, provided you thought of it before you were bleeding to death on a beach in some distant corner of the satrapies because you were so damn dumb. Using the green of the jungle canopy as his source, he drafted a green, flexible sole to walk on, thought about it for a minute, and then drafted entire boots of green Luxon. Because his feet were already bloody, he left an open connection between his feet and the bottommost layer of the sole so that he would be able to adjust the grip of his shoes immediately. It flirted with a line of using magic in ways that become part of your own body. Incarnative. But there were no magisters here. Kip walked, adjusting his boots until he was happy with them, and trying to lock that design in his mind in case he ever needed this again. Every drafter did this, he realized. They came up with useful designs and memorized them to be used quickly again. It was just that simpletons designed shoes while savants designed skimmers. The number of designs you could make as your colors expanded had to be an exponential curve. Had Gavin Gile memorized 1,000,000 designs, or did he just understand magic so deeply that he didn't have to memorize designs? He merely created what made sense. Like you don't have to think how to walk up stairs that are slightly steeper than the stairs you're used to. You just do. It seemed the more Kip learned about magic, the more impressed he was with those who used it artfully. Then again, he'd gone green golem once, purely on instinct. You got potential, Kip. And you know what potential means, he replied. Ain't done nothing yet. It was actually kind of comforting to hear the sound of his own voice. He kept walking. Whether under oar or sail, galleys could travel 12 to 15 leagues a day. Most galleys only had a range of 4 days before they needed fresh provisions. As galleys became less prevalent, being replaced by ships with longer ranges, many of the coastal towns that lived on the galley traffic were struggling. They would die in another generation or two, but they weren't gone yet. So at the maximum, there had to be a town within 60 leagues. Assuming he hadn't been dropped precisely in between two towns, Kip would obviously find one closer if he walked the right direction. But he'd been blindfolded. The nearest town could only be a league or two south, while he was heading north. Of course, there should be little towns in between two, like that little fishing town so close to Ruick Head, where the whales had gone crazy. And the people, too. That was, if all the towns hadn't been abandoned by people fearful of the advancing army of color whites, in which case he could walk until he died, and not helping Kip. He was hungry. No, don't think about that. Anything else. At worst, if Kip could walk 8 leagues a day, he should make it to a town in 7 days. At worst. He could do that. All he needed was water. He could live on his fat for plenty long enough, theoretically, though he would walk slower as he became weaker. He found himself moving imaginary abacus beads as he did the figures. Funny, that helped. That is, it helped him with the arithmetic. A smarter person would probably shut off his brain and walk. Kip had always been about as good at shutting off his brain as he was at shutting off his mouth. Straight pipe between the two, Mother used to say. He was assuming he could walk 8 leagues a day. Here, on the clear beaches, that seemed entirely plausible. But Kip knew there were other areas of the coastline that were rocky, where cliffs bordered the sea or jungles abutted the waves almost directly. Points protruded for leagues out into the sea. If Kip followed the coastline exactly, he would have to travel much more than the 60 leagues a ship would travel between towns. If he didn't follow the coastline exactly, he'd risk getting lost in an unfamiliar jungle or forest. For a few minutes he had to concentrate on breathing. His throat constricted, his chest tight, trying to throttle him. But he didn't stop walking. His mind clamped down on that refusal like a bulldog's jaw locking. He was the turtle bear, and the turtle bear can't be stopped. What was the worst that could happen? He could fail. He'd failed before, plenty. He could die. He'd almost died plenty of times now. Sometimes it was scary, sometimes it was terrifying, sometimes it was exhilarating. Often it was uncontrollable, no matter what you did, right or wrong. You don't stop and make death a sure thing just because going on might result in death. Kip was a fat, miserable disappointment, but he wasn't a quitter. He grinned suddenly. A fat, miserable disappointment. Who had, albeit with lots of qualifiers, killed a king, saved the prism, and killed a god. Not bad for a fatty. Hell, he'd even outsmarted Andros Guile once. Odd that he thought of outsmarting Andros Guile as more impressive than killing a god. The god thing felt like luck, though, or like Orholm had surveyed the field for a suitable tool to keep his prism alive, or finding none suitable, had picked up Kip because he was closest. Kip paused. I treat myself pretty shitty, he thought. I'd never let anyone treat a friend of mine this way. An hour later he found a stream. He drank, hoping the water was good. Truth was, he didn't have much choice. He slowly drank more, waiting to make sure it didn't make him throw up, and then sipping more. He stood, wishing he had a water skin. He caught sight of his green Luxin boots. Golly, if only I had some way to make a water skin. With a sigh, he drafted a green bag. Magic first, magic always, Kip. He scooped up a great volume of water, then bent the green until it fit comfortably across his back. Drafted straps that fit his shoulders, drafted a belt. Magic. So useful, it's like magic. Talking to this madman is making me crazy, Kip said. Funny. You'll know you're almost finished when you forget it's supposed to be ironic. He decided while he was walking he could catch up on all the practica he'd missed. Unfortunately, at his level, the Blackguard training had consisted almost purely of hand-to-hand combat, the idea being that such was the foundation for all their future training. On the ships travelling to Ruick Head, they'd been taught proper grips and basic handling of swords and how to reload muskets. The other new Blackguard inductees already knew it all. Some of them had been training with weapons for years. Some were proficient with bows and other weapons that Kip had barely even picked up. He was way, way behind. But I can go Green Golem. Fat lot of good that does me now. He felt like the coast was swooping out to a point, but looking at the sun alone wasn't enough to confirm his suspicions. His classmate, Ben Haydad, had once said that he'd learned to draft a sextant so he would never be lost. Of course, you still needed a compass, too, and while you could draft a housing and a medium on which to float a bit of philosopher's stone, there was no such thing as lodestone Luxin. Some things still had to be done the hard way. And easy or hard, Kip didn't have any of the skills that would have saved him. This was what losing one game of nine kings had cost him. His grandfather had forbidden Kip to attend practica. Kip was trying to intuit what others had studied for generations. Well, am I a genius of magic or not? Wait, why am I messing about thinking about sextants and compasses and water skins? I should be making a skimmer. He'd seen it done. He'd even helped propel one. But a failure with a complicated device like the skimmer would leave him in the middle of the sea with no way to get out. Kip could float, but it wasn't like he was going to drift to Big Jasper, and if he tried Gavin's jetting trick to swim, he'd break the halo before he got halfway there. I can draft all these colours. It's as if I've got a toolbox full of every imaginable tool, and I'm too stupid to use them. Too ignorant, perhaps. A kinder voice answered him. It was true. You wouldn't blame a savage for the fact that he can't read. But you wouldn't trust him with reading you letters, either. The light began to fade, and Kip turned his mind to different problems. He found a clean area of the beach just at the edge where the palm trees gave him shelter. He took off his water pack. Staring at the darkening sky, he gathered enough blue to draft a blue Luxin box with a single hole in the top, and sealed it. Then, standing on the beach facing the sinking sun, he gathered as much red as he could, patiently, slowly. The passions of red flooded through him, but he ignored them and simply filled the blue box. He filled the box full with a version of red Luxin called Pyre Jelly. He hadn't been thinking clearly. And by the time the box was full, there wasn't enough heat coming from the sun to give Kip sub-red. He'd need to light his fire manually. It took him half an hour in the fading light to find a rock that looked like flint. He banged rocks together for another half hour. Nothing sparked. He wanted to scream. He hitched his pants up and sat, rubbing his face. He tightened his belt and saw that he was past the last tightest hole. Not 6 months ago he'd been at the loosest hole on the belt, praying he didn't get any fatter because he didn't know where he'd get the money or the leather for a new belt. All the rest of his clothing had been replaced at the Cromeria, but it had seemed wasteful to get rid of his belt. Besides, his mother had given it to him during one of her rare sober spells. Kip pulled the belt off. One of the flints had a sharp point that he could use to scratch out a new hole. He looked at the buckle. The metal buckle. If he could punch himself in the stupid, he would knock it to Sunday. Kip scratched the buckle against the flint he'd found, and wonder of wonders, it sparked. He lit the pyre jelly with no problem. It burned nicely. Kip sat and pulled his water pack to himself as the stars came out. Maybe some water would take the edge off his hunger. The green Luxin pack was sealed. Kip hadn't drafted any way to open it. If it had been light out, he could have drafted more green and simply opened the green Luxin and redrafted it shut. Instead, he had to treat it as a purely physical object. He wanted to cry, or scream, or throw a fit. Instead, eventually, Kip dug a hole in a weak part of the water bag with the sharp flint. Holding the pack over his head, he was able to drink from the warm stream of water until he filled himself. Kip's lamp guttered as the pyre jelly burned below the level of the hole. With no wick to pull the jelly up to the air, the fire starved and went out. Kip looked at it like it had personally betrayed him. He could smash the blue lamp holding the jelly, of course. He'd not made it very thick, but then the pyre jelly would burn off in perhaps a half an hour. If Kip had his spectacles, he could use that firelight to... He didn't. Those were back on the ship. He'd not been wearing the lens holster the night Gavin had almost been killed. He took that dagger for me. Kip had thought that Gavin liked him, approved of him like you approve of a well-trained pet. A sane man might risk danger to save his dog, but only an idiot would die for a dog, right? Gavin Garr was no idiot. He knew his worth in the scheme of things, and things couldn't have been going better for him. He'd just married Caris, just turned a decisive defeat at the hands of the Colour Prince into a narrow victory. Kip had seen it in his eyes, as Kip had revealed Andros was a red, white, and attacked him. Gavin had known. Known about his father, for one. He'd shown no surprise. He'd been keeping that card in his hand to play at the right time, and Kip had shouted it out to the world, Kip the Lip, saying exactly what he thought, speaking without thinking, endangering plans he couldn't even fathom. But Gavin had also known, in that moment Kip had seen it, as they scrambled, four men fighting over two blades, that Kip didn't have the leverage to stop Andros and Grinwoody from burying the knife in his chest.
What Kip hadn't seen then, but knew now, was that with how their hands were interlaced, the only direction Gavin could pull the blade that wouldn't be blocked was toward himself.
He'd done it on purpose. He hadn't stabbed himself, of course, he wasn't suicidal, but once the blade's direction had changed, Grinwoody and Andros had pushed hard instantly, not knowing, or not being able to stop, or not caring. Why would Gavin save me, knowing the cost was his own life? Gavin gave his life for me. The prism himself. The best prism in centuries, maybe ever. What did that mean? What did that say about Kip's worth? The thought was too big, the emotions welling up behind it too frightening. Kip was that lost kid whose mother had forgotten him in a closet full of rats. He wasn't... A tear dropped from his cheek and hit his protruding stomach. Where had that come from? He rubbed the tears away with a grubby paw, bare once more. And what the hell had happened with that knife anyway? The blinder's knife, Andros Gyle had called it, a knife that didn't kill Gavin but grew inside him instead. And how did my mother get such a thing? That was better, safer, cerebral. Kip could think about that. But not, it turned out, for long. He was exhausted. He hadn't drafted a pallet to sleep on, a blanket. Could you make a blanket out of Luxon? Or any kind of shirt. He hadn't prepped any of the mundane bedding that might have made his sleep more comfortable either. He broke the top of the blue Luxon lamp and scraped a spark into it. My father loves me. Of all men, Gavin Gile thinks I'm worth saving. The Luxon lit with a whoosh, and Kip felt waves of warmth beating back the night's cold. The fire would not last long, but Kip figured he'd be asleep by then. He was right. No sooner had his bare shoulder touched the sand than he began to dream of beasts and gods.